Before we get started, I want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? Only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in the episode. Welcome on to this week's Hollinger and Duncan. A couple of programming notes. First of all, we had a few issues with our desktop client on Locker Room, so we had to record that just using our iPads. Apologies for the audio quality at the end here, but we figured we'd put it on there. If the audio quality is too difficult to deal with, well, we totally understand, but we give you a chance to listen to it anyway. And the first part of the pod, though, will be our normal quality. That should be fine. And also a note that next week we will not be joining you. John is finally taking it a little bit of time off before the playoffs. So our next show will be on Wednesday, May 19th. Let's get started here talking about the best players in the NBA and what they have to prove in the playoffs. Okay, welcome on to Hollinger and Duncan. We've got much to get to here. John wrote a column that speculated that Nikola Jokic might be the best player in the NBA. I got some thoughts on that. A lot of people have some thoughts on that. And also, we have not ruled a team out of the playoffs for several weeks here. That is going to get real interesting also. And anything else that's been on John and my mind, we'll get to. And then we will get to our locker room hangout at the top of the hour here in about an hour. John's got his sneeze out of the way, so we are ready to go here. What's going on, man?
Not too much. Feeling better about putting Nate Bjorker in 29th on my coaches list, though.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's not too good. Some of these reports are not encouraging the micromanaging of assistants when you've got your own assistant coaches revolting against you.
And that, I mean, that's very, very just from kind of grapevine chatter, like, yeah, that's definitely a thing. So yeah, that's a problem.
Well, so what do you think that is, like micromanaging the assistants? Like what would that consist of, you think?
You know, there's a lot that goes into the day-to-day on the coaching staff side. And, you know, I just don't know. I don't know enough specifics to know exactly what it could be. But, I mean, when you're a head coach, you're a little bit of CEO, too. And you have to manage that staff and make sure that everyone's voice can be heard. But at the same time, you know, you got to kind of keep everyone in line, too. And usually that's why a lot of times coaches will add a couple of quote unquote loyalists to their staff just to make that whole process easier. So I don't know enough about the details of what exactly has happened with the micromanaging. But yeah, that's definitely a story that's been bouncing around the league.
Yeah, I mean, you would imagine, because there's, for those who haven't been in an NBA arena pregame, you'll see everybody kind of gets their vitamins. I think that's what the Warriors would call it.
That's the original Spurs terminology. Yeah,
Spurs. Okay.
Getting all the player development work done in those, you know, 2.5 hours to 60 minutes before the game, before all the guys who are actually going to play get out there for their warmups. You have all the game prep they're doing. You have the shoot around work. There's just a lot, you know, obviously on practice days, there's hardly any practice this year, but on practice days, you have all kinds of routines that need to be done. So there's a lot that goes into it beyond just the 2.5 hours that the game is going on. And then there's the game preps that the individual coaches do too. So typically they'll split the league up into roughly thirds among the top three assistants. Every team does it a little differently. And those teams will be that coach's prep, so to speak. And he'll be in charge of the team's preparation for that game in terms of going through their plays in the shoot around and introducing, you know, some of the things they're going to be doing and kind of the overarching strategy of how to play them offensively and defensively. So, was there conflict with that? Maybe.
Yeah, I want to do the player development with this guy this way, and he's micromanaging every aspect of that. Yeah. Or even you'll see guys afterwards, you know, they'll do their, even for the guys who are better players, sometimes you'll see them go through their warm-up about 15, 20 minutes out there on the floor, and then they'll sit down on the sideline with whoever kind of their guy is on the staff with an iPad and go through the matchups for that day and stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff that, you know, individual assistants are probably on most teams are just coming up with that type of stuff themselves. Maybe there's an overarching plan of things you want to focus on from the head coach. So maybe, I mean, that's like the first sort of thing that would come to mind for me in terms of micromanaging, because those are the things that the assistants normally are just kind of more responsible for on their own.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because I couldn't think of what else it would be that like normally would just be assistants are planning this without like too much direct input from the head coach. Yeah, and also, I mean, you'll see this sometimes on staffs too, that guys are very jealous of those relationships, right? Like you want to, you get the number one overall draft pick on your team, you know, Anthony Edwards with the Wolves or something, not that I know specifically, but like,
yeah,
you know, if you're an assistant coach, yeah, you want to hitch your wagon to that star. You want to be responsible for developing that guy. So if he turns into a star, then you kind of, so some of the credit rolls down to you in that situation.
Yeah, totally.
So there are, you do kind of have like these little fiefdoms at times within teams, because you know each coach kind of has their own guy as far as who they're going to be working out. Yeah, that's too bad. The other thing that I thought was fascinating, which I didn't know until Woj's piece, was he only has one more guaranteed year on his contract.
That didn't shock me. There's been other coaching contracts that are 2+1s. I mean, I've seen that before. So that part actually didn't shock me.
Yeah, or a 3-1.
three minus one. Yeah, it's probably a better way to put it. But yeah.
Yeah, but usually the standard is a 4-1 for these, but maybe that is why he ended up there. And some of the other guys that they interviewed, like Chris Finch, was rumored to be a big candidate there, and didn't end up getting the job. So what do you think happens there? Is there any way he can come back from this, Nate Bjorkgren? I mean, I guess we should summarize, if you didn't hear the reports from both Woj and then Shams and Sam Amick about Bjorkgren kind of being in trouble, Sabonis and Brogdon not liking him, and his schemes being a little bit too rigid. I understand why Sabonis doesn't like him, because he wants Sabonis to like get out in the perimeter and like pressure. That hasn't really worked too well. And obviously, they gave up $154 to the Wizards. Their transition defense has been atrocious. Jay Michael's kind of been all over this story too. So anyway, there's, you know, I thought they could move on from him, but they're still trying to work with him and stuff. So with that background, what do you make of the situation at this point?
That was, I think that's like attempt to salvage the season language right now. And like when something like this gets out, it's almost always taps.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'm trying to think of who the last guy was that this happened to. And I will say, this is another one of those, Lloyd Pierce was an example of this too. We talked about it before. And I liked the Bjorkgren hire. I liked some of the things he's tried to implement, but, and it hasn't been fair. They've had all these injuries. You know, I think given the available talent, I wouldn't say that they've vastly underperformed.
Right. I would agree. I would agree with that. Yeah, they've had a ton of injuries, and you know they weren't supposed to dominate the league. But some of the stuff that's gone on at the defensive end has been a little head scratching, and I think somewhere along the way they lost religion a little bit in the locker room.
Yeah. I mean, it would help if they had more than two good defensive players on the roster, and if their defensive player of the year candidate had actually played it all the last month. They were pretty decent defensively, I think, before that, and they'd be good with Turner on the floor. But yeah, regardless of whether he deserves to be fired based on the record or not, if Malcolm Brogdon and Domantas Sabonis are pissed off at you, you're probably not going to lie.
In
the end, it seems like. So I know that many of you are just starting out. Maybe you're buying a home, starting a family, getting married. Make sure that you add securing your family's future to your to-do list by establishing a will or trust at trustandwill.com. So you can set up an estate plan simply, conveniently, and securely. As little as $39 will allow you to nominate guardians for your children, determine who gets your stuff, and plan for future medical care. You can do it all from the comfort of your home. You don't want to use a one-size-fits-all template, because you're not everyone, and a traditional estate attorney charging by the hour, that can cost thousands. Instead, trust and will documents are designed by estate planning experts and customized for the state that you live in. And they also have live customer support 7 days a week, so they can answer any questions that you have while setting up your plan. I know a lot of our listeners, including me, we think of ourselves as pretty young, and I realize, no, I'm actually in my early 40s now. And while I certainly don't expect anything to happen to me, you never expect something to happen to you. And so just getting this done now with trustandwill.com rather than waiting, you have it taken off your mind. There's never really a good time to do this. So just do it now and have it ready. Gain peace of mind at trustandwill.com/PER. Easy to remember, /PER, because John invented it. You can get 10% off plus free shipping of your customized legal documents. Just go right now and get 10% off plus free shipping at trustandwill.com/PER. Trustandwill.com/PER. Don't forget that /PER to let them know that you came from us. Wouldn't it be great if there were a pocket-sized guide that helped you sleep or focus or just feel better? There is. If you have 10 minutes, Headspace can change your life with your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditations and an easy-to-use app. It's one of the only meditation apps advancing the field of mindfulness through clinically validated research. That's the difference with Headspace. If you're feeling overwhelmed, Headspace is a 3-minute SOS meditation for you. Need some help falling asleep? Headspace has wind-down sessions that the members swear by, and they even have morning meditations you can do with your kids to get them started on that as well. Headspace now has 25 published studies on its benefits, 600,000 five-star reviews, and over 60 million downloads. Use Zer to feel happier, and Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/lockdownmba, the name of this network. That's headspace.com/lockdownmba for a free 1-month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. This is the best deal that they are offering right now. Head to headspace.com/lockdownmba today. Okay, so let's get to the MVP race. I think I will preface this by thinking I haven't really gone through it yet, but I would imagine that Nikola Jokic is going to be my pick for MVP. He might even be my pick for the best overall offensive player in basketball. Mm-hmm. And you wrote a column this week saying not only that you think that he's the obvious MVP, but that he could certainly be the best player in basketball. The Ringer did their top 25 players in the NBA rankings that just came out. They had Nikola Jokic as the best player in the NBA. And when Danny LaRue and I did our top 10 players in the NBA, I had Nikola Jokic as the 9th best player in the NBA. So, I'll cede the floor to you here, because you seem actually closer to the conventional wisdom at this point in time of why is it that Nikola Jokic, well, I guess you said might be the best player in the NBA. So would you say he is, or are you just considering him as a candidate at this point?
I would say that if you held a gun to my head, I would say he is. I would feel more sure of my opinion after the postseason, because that is the crucible where all these guys get tested, right? Because coaches game plan specifically for them, and we see what advanced schemes they can handle and what maybe they can't, and that we didn't necessarily get to see in the regular season. So it's a different animal, right? Like, because if we just went off regular season, we would probably say, you know what? I'm still going to grandfather Giannis into the number one spot. But he's shown his vulnerabilities in the postseason the last 2 years. And Jokic has actually been really good in the playoffs the last 2 years, too, even before this year. But you still want to see him get tested again at that highest level. Especially, I mean, it'd be really interesting this year where your game plan is really just going to be all Jokic, you know, if you're Denver's opponent and how he deals with that. The reason I would lean that way is because I just think he has surpassed all these other guys as the ultimate cheat code on offense. And it's really amazing for this to happen, because we had morphed from a post-up center league to a perimeter guy with the ball in his hands, like big, you know, apex wing type of league, where that, you know, that was the guy, right? That was the thing that separated you as a team, having that LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard type player. Durant with the Warriors. I mean, obviously Curry had his golden era there as well, but you know, those types of players were where the league was going. And then all of a sudden, a center comes along who is also basically a point guard. And I just don't know what the hell you do against this guy. Like, even he's the one guy that flummoxes, like, even Rudy Gobert, who's an awesome defensive player, who's going to win Defensive Player of the Year, right? And against Jokic, it's just like, he's like, what do I do? Like, you know, because Jokic is big enough to still score on him in the post if he really has to, or can at least score on him in the post more effectively than any other human. And but his passing is such a weapon, like, you can't double him. You're just playing with fire. They have like no NBA guards right now, and they still have an offense because his passing just makes these non-players at least viable threats, and they, you know, end up getting 10 points from randoms just off of passes from Jokic. I And he does it without really needing to dominate the ball. So I just think offensively, he's at such a level right now that, yeah, he's not an elite defensive player. He's actually like pretty decent now. He used to not be good. And, you know, if you have to go switch heavy, if you're the Nuggets, that's probably not ideal, right? Like you don't necessarily want Jokic tracking guys out on the perimeter still. Pretty good around the basket. Pretty good around the basket. Pretty good hands too, which makes up for some stuff.
So I'm in agreement with most of what you said, particularly on the offensive end. I thought that Gobert actually did a really good job against Jokic and stopped him in the post in last year's playoffs. Jokic, of course, has gotten better since then, and he did put up that massive game against the Jazz this year. So I'd be interested to see if those teams match up. It looks like that actually could happen in the second round.
We'll see, exactly. But, that would be super interesting. And the other thing Jokic did this year, he's really added the three-point shot, which wasn't a big part of his game before. And when he started shooting pick-and-pop threes in that Utah series last year, I thought that really helped change things.
So when you talk about the best player in the NBA, like what is your, do you have a criteria that you look at for determining that? I mean, as far as like how you apportion regular season and playoffs, or just, you know, is it playing well in the playoffs? Is it winning a championship? Like what, how would you say what your criteria is? I'll give you mine while you think about it. It's the way Danny and I do it is if we were starting a regular season and playoffs right now, who would we most want on our team with the goal of winning a championship on a random type of team? I mean, not random, you know, OKC, because they're not actually trying to win, but a random team that's trying to win with random talent around you. Who is going to increase your championship odds the most over the course of a regular season and playoffs? That's what our criteria is. Is that close to what you would have, or what you think?
I'd say that's a good criteria. Yeah, that's probably pretty close to what to where I'm at. I would say the higher you go up the ladder, the more the postseason part matters, because I mean at a certain level, like when you're comparing players as you get further down, you're more in an area where you're just trying to get into the playoffs, right?
Right.
But when you're at this highest level, the differentiator becomes, okay, well, what can this guy do in a conference final series? What can this guy do in an NBA finals? So that would probably be the distinction. And then, you know, durability is such a interesting part of this, because injuries are fluky on the one hand, but on the other hand, you want a guy you reasonably can expect to make it through the season and the playoffs. Like, you know, Joel Embiid, for instance, is a guy who, if I have to play one game, you know, he's probably one of the first few guys off our board. But if we're talking about playing an entire season, then you got to move him way down.
Yeah, the history has shown for Embiid that, you know, I would say, because I put more stock in the playoffs, basically, and the playoffs, I think, are more different than the regular season than we've ever seen, particularly in this crazy-ass year. But you got to conclude that a guy like Embiid or maybe Kyrie Irving, there's probably a 50% chance based on the history that they're not going to be fully healthy in the playoffs, and you got to obviously price that in.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even that, you know, if they miss even two playoff games, well, that could be the difference right there, you know?
So I'm not going to give you my rationale yet for having Jokic lower, okay, but I'll give you the eight players that I have above him in order.
Okay.
LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Stephen Curry, mm-hmm, Anthony Davis, mm-hmm, Kevin Durant, Giannis, Embiid, and Luka. And I have Jokic above Lillard, and I have him above Harden. That's my top 11. So am I completely insane, given the criteria we talked about, to have Jokic below those eight guys that I mentioned?
I don't think you're completely insane, because I think it's relatively... I don't think you're completely insane on this narrow criteria.
Yeah, they're not coming for me with a straitjacket yet, baby.
Because I think it is a very narrow distinction at the top right now. And I feel like it hasn't always been that way. But among the top 10, but like I feel like the gap between 1 and 10 is pretty small. I was a little surprised you did not mention in those top names Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I had him as number 13.
Okay.
And Paul George is number 12. So yeah, I mean, Butler has been awesome too. Like it's, and as we get into this discussion, I'm sure I'm going to get ripped again for this one, but I think it's important to remember that there's more talent at the top of the NBA right now than I think there's ever been. And also that basically all those players, other than sadly LeBron right now, are looking like, and maybe Harden, looking like they're going to be healthy going into the postseason, which is rare that you can say, despite how crazy this year has been. So, I think it's going to be an awesome playoffs for that reason. But would you agree with me that there's more top-end talent in the NBA right now than there's ever been?
I agree with you. And when I was going through this exercise, it really hit me when I was placing Brooklyn's guys. And when I realized that, wow, like they... they're not as high as I thought they'd be just based on, you know, trying to consider them alone rather than, you know, looking at the Nets and they have these three awesome players and you're like, wow. And then you really go through it and you're like, can I put you at seven? Can I justify that? You know, it's hard.
Yeah.
We actually agree on the five best players non-Jokic division.
Yes.
So I had like LeBron and Kawhi are kind of the two guys at the top. And then, you know, LeBron is interesting. Where do you place him right now? I think you still give him the respect for his historical accomplishment, right? If we did a redraft today.
Well, and the way I do it too, by the way, is everybody gets over the injuries that they've had and you start the year, right? So like LeBron getting a high ankle sprain, that doesn't ding him. But, you know, Klay Thompson coming off an Achilles, we're saying he's healthy, but he's coming off an Achilles, so he still is going to have a reduced performance, you would think, because he's coming off an Achilles.
Yeah. I mean, LeBron was not having a dominant regular season before the injury.
I mean, most people had him like number one in MVP. I guess you just
that didn't was agree that with was, that. But that to me wasn't based on what was happening on the court. That was just like a narrative-driven thing based off of the last postseason.
I thought he was playing pretty good. He was up there for me. The Lakers were awesome when he was out there. He had like a down spell, and then he was ramping up again before he had the high ankle sprain. He had some really good games. He's also, you know, probably one of the better guys on this group defensively at this point, having rededicated himself there.
Yeah.
As a Laker. So, and obviously also, a big part of my ranking him number one was that he was the best player in the world in the last playoffs. And I'm kind of too, there's only
was,
so much.
Was he though? Wait. Was he the best player on his own team in the last playoffs?
Well, that guy's number four. I would still say so. I thought he was pretty damn awesome in those playoffs. I mean, especially the way he put the Nuggets away in particular. I think he had earned that crown again to me with his playmaking and scoring and the way that he's still not quite the scorer that he used to be. I think that's really the only part of his game that I would look at as having declined a reasonable amount. But yeah, I mean, that was one of the, you know, if it's the second greatest player of all time, just won the championship and still playing at a very high level and won finals MVP, I feel pretty decent about saying he was the best. But that's not to underrate what Davis did. He was unbelievable in the playoffs too. I have a number four for a reason as well. So so I guess for me, there's only so much that you can do, particularly with how different the regular season and the postseason are now. There's only so much that you can do to prove anything to me that doesn't take place in the playoffs on this list for me. And so that's part of why I'm maybe a little bit stickier with past results. Like, I agree with, like, offensively, Jokic might be the best offensive player in basketball. But then what I go back to is I think his defense is a major problem in the playoffs, because you mentioned the lack of scheme versatility. If you look at it historically, you know, and they're going to finish up at probably, you know, like the 13th best defense. Yeah. They've actually been worse defense with him on the floor. Part of that's some bad shooting luck from three. I think opponents are shooting like 6% better from three when he's on the floor. That's not necessarily his fault. But go back and look at history. What would you say is the last team that won a championship with a defensive center the caliber of Jokic?
Right.
We can take some time. We can edit out this silence. You're going to have to go back pretty far, I am guessing, to find one.
I mean, he's better than Zaza Pachulia.
Well, but that's... Draymond Green was really their defensive
side. Okay, okay.
Like, in their best lineup at the end of games. And also, they, you know, that's when they went to that switching group. They had the scheme versatility. So, you know, Zaza was playing 15 minutes a game. So I wouldn't, you know, as like your primary center at the end of games.
I mean, can I count Kevin Love? Or does he, are you gonna say Tristan Thompson?
I would probably have to say Tristan Thompson.
Tristan was good in that series, but I mean, Love was a big who was a worse defensive player than Jokic, though.
Yes. Although remember, part of why they won that series is because he got a concussion and barely played. I know he had the big stop on Steph at the end of game 7, but he didn't do much in that series. Yeah. And they all, you know, that maybe could be one you would point to, but I guess what I could add in here too is not only the quality, but then the ability, at least in the last 10 years, to play different types of schemes. And they'll certainly change up the conventional type of schemes that they'll do, either bringing him up to touch or playing a drop coverage or like really blitzing it or bringing more help in from the wings to protect Jokic. But you can't really do much of a switching style at all, which I think is still something that you need to have in your bag defensively. That would be my thought. I accept your premise that Nikola Jokic, even in the playoffs, might be the best offensive player in the world. But in my opinion, I mean, you have to go back to maybe like late 80s Kareem to find another defensive center. And that was obviously a totally different game, but to find a team with a defensive center who had the issues that Jokic has. And I will also take a little bit of issue with what you said about him being good defensively around the basket, because teams annually shoot one of the highest percentages against the Nuggets at the rim and against him specifically at the rim based on the sport view data. So I think if you get a running start at him, he's been a little bit better blocking some shots lately because he's gotten in better shape, but he still is not providing a ton of resistance. I think like you can go back to that Jazz series last year to see that.
Well, those first four games were ridiculous last year, unquestionably.
Yeah. And then they changed up their scheme to give up a bunch of threes, which the Jazz kind of started missing, and bring in a bunch of help from the wing. And also Gary Harris came back and kind of saved them to make them a little bit better defensively last year. And they stopped the Clippers, which I give them a lot of credit for. I mean, a lot of this is reliant on what they did to the Clippers last year. If you take out that series, I think they really have not defended at anywhere near the level they would need to win a championship in the playoffs the last 2 years.
Yeah, because they struggled with that the year before in the series against San Antonio and Portland, both. Business losing that series to Portland.
No, I agree with you on that. So that's my thought. And it's kind of unfair to Jokic, because he is a great offensive player, and you know he's no worse at his position defensively than say Steph Curry is as a point guard, but that's just the luck of the draw of being a center. Like, you have to be good on defense as a center, I say, to win a championship. And maybe he'll just be so good on offense they'll outscore everybody and it's not gonna matter.
The one thing he does is, because he is such a matchup problem, he takes away your ability to go small against them. Like, are you gonna play Marcus Morris against the Nuggets, I mean.
That's interesting. Now, the Warriors actually did a pretty good job defending him the last couple of times they played with Looney and Draymond. You know, we'll see what with the Lakers. You know, you probably have to put a big center out there. I mean, my thought is you got to double team him anyway, so you might as well just go small and outscore them. But no, that is a good point. Like, his offense could just be so good that you can't attack them enough. But even if you're just playing a conventional pick and roll offense like the Jazz were, you should be able to. You're going to get threes against the Nuggets, or you're going to get to the rim, one of the two, because their scheme is designed to protect him.
Yeah.
So that's my thought there. And I don't think that you and I disagree that much on what Jokic is at a player and what he's good at. I think we just disagree on how important the defensive liability is. So any reaction to that? I mean, are my concerns valid or am I being too hard on the defense here?
I think your concerns are valid, and I think that's the part of this that's the mystery, right? Because we want to see what skinny Jokic looks like on defense in the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, he kind of was skinny Jokic last year as well. He's even quicker, I would say, now. But
yeah.
And also, I mean, and part of, I think, my thinking also is informed by, you know, the two dominant teams, I guess the three dominant teams of the last decade just were impossible to stop with any kind of conventional pick and roll scheme. Like the LeBron Heat, once they put Bosh at center, LeBron's Cleveland teams, and then the Warriors, like there's... You could not stop that team, those teams with Jokic at center. Maybe there isn't that team out there now. Perhaps that team is the Nets, but we'll see whether they face them. So, and I mean, the other big shame, obviously, is that Jamal Murray tore his ACL. And so,
right.
as well as Denver has played.
Like, is this team going to win the championship anyway? No.
No.
Right? No, so that makes it a harder eval also.
Right. But if they, and we'll see how they're going to go up against some good offensive teams. Like if they go up against the Suns, for example, like are they going to be able to stop Chris Paul and Devin Booker in mm-hmm. pick and roll? Like that would be a very interesting question to me. Or going up against this Jazz team again as well. I mean, they're a really good pick and roll team as well and have even better shooters than they had last year. And that could easily be the second round series. Although, I mean, they would have to, even dealing with Luka and Porzingis.
I was going
to
say, what about Dallas, the Dallas series? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Porzingis has always caused big problems for the Nuggets when he's actually been on the court in Dallas. We'll see whether that actually happens again. So I do think we're going to get some important information about how well they play defensively going up against some really good pick and roll offenses this year. But I couldn't go there yet on Jokic because there's so many other great players that have proven it, that have won championships. And also, you know, aren't causing problems for their team defensively.
Yeah, that's like I said. I mean, that's the one mystery remaining. I just think offensively, he's the ultimate cheat code right now. And so I want to see if that. I mean, we'll see what they throw at him in the playoffs, and if that part carries over too. And if he's just so potent at that end that it doesn't. It's like Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, their defense isn't going to be that good. Well, is it going to matter?
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe Marc Gasol thought did a pretty decent job on him in that game the other day and historically has. And I think Gobert has so little around him that's a little bit of an issue. Maybe Draymond to some degree, although he's potentially going to get overpowered too. And also the Nuggets, I think the lack of shooting that they have is going to start to be more of a problem when you're doubling off of Dozier or Campazzo and really locked in on who you can not guard for the Nuggets. I think that things might get more difficult for Jokic as well.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
So, yeah, I'm really interested to see what's going to happen here. But, I see no problem in trying to get out ahead of this because he has been that good offensively. It's my only other concern with him would be, is this massive step up in jump shooting, particularly from the three-point line, is that real? So he's been in the low 30s most of his career.
Yeah, I mean, I trust it a little because he shoots 86 from the line and he has such obvious touch inside the arc.
Yeah. It seemed like you would almost take him like as an afterthought or out of guilt before, and now he's really using it. He's just gotten so much more aggressive as a scorer, as you highlighted in your piece.
Yeah, yeah. And the degree of difficulty on some of these shots he makes, I mean, like, what do you even do with them?
Did you see Draymond's pantomime of the Sambor shuffle the other day when he was talking about it? He's just like...
I did not.
Yeah, it was great. He was like sitting there at the press table and I think Slater asked him about, you know, what's it like guarding Embiid compared to Jokic? And he's like, you know, Embiid, he'll really try and put you in the goal. And then Jokic, you know, he hits this ridiculous right foot fadeaway. He like pantomimed it. It was pretty funny, but it's called the Sambor shuffle. Draymond, get it right.
Yes.
Adam Morris made that up. Well, John, we've talked about Nikola Jokic maybe more than we've ever talked about one player on this program consecutively. And thus, we'd be remiss in not naming him the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. At 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Joy creates success, and enjoyment isn't the end game, it's the whole game. Are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? I'm certainly happy when I watch Nikola Jokic play basketball, that's for sure. And he is the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. So I'm actually in Chicago right now. It is safe to travel again. I'm actually visiting my mom's house for the first time in over a year. But I was reminded, of course, that air travel, not too good. You sit there for a while, 4-hour flight from the West Coast. You get up, your calves are sore. You got all this swelling. Well, good thing I remembered to bring my my Theragun with me. Theragun is the handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension. It's got a scientifically calibrated combo of depth, speed, and power, and it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush. Their signature percussive therapy, there are many imitators, but Theragun goes 60% deeper than vibration alone. You can get rid of those adhesions, just get rid of some general soreness, whether it's your neck, sitting at your desk, lifting weights, running, work on your IT bands, work on your calves. Consistent work with your Theragun can really just help your muscles feel better and more supple. Try Theragun for 30 days, starting at only $199. Go to theragun.com/PR right now. Get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's theragun.com/PR. Remember, John invented that. Theragun.com/PR. Don't forget that /PR. Let them know that you came from us. Any other like interesting, before we kind of, we got to do some like eliminating teams from the playoffs and get to the locker room, obviously, but any other kind of thoughts on like players that you're really interested in among these superstars of how they're going to play in these playoffs, guys who kind of have a lot on the line in terms of their standing in the league these playoffs?
Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, he was number 15 in the NBA on my list.
Okay, I have him 13 provisionally, which is weird because I think he has a great case to be number two on MVP ballots this year. Between his health, his defense, and the fact that the offense basically revolves around him, even though he doesn't have the ball in his hands that much, and they've been the best team in the league. But
yeah,
I think there's a little more question, how does his level of play translate into a playoff environment at the highest level? I mean, he's still, like, he's good on switches, though, so it's not really that as much as offensively, if you just switch against Utah, can they be as potent?
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting. Their numbers in the regular season on shooting off the dribble contested are pretty good. They've found a way to work in the regular season, but again, today's regular season numbers, I am very loath to translate them into the playoffs without a healthy dose of skepticism. And yeah, Gobert as well, is he going to be able to make up for the fact that they don't really have much else on the perimeter and that the best players in the NBA are able to hit contested jump shots off the dribble, and there's not really much that Rudy Gobert can do about that.
Well, that's a point. Yeah, at the defensive end, if you play a team like the Clippers, who is just going to be shooting jump shot after jump shot, how can Rudy Gobert impact that game at a high level?
And you also mentioned, the Clippers aren't going to play Marcus Morris at center against Jokic, but they can do that against Gobert. And now you run into the issue of they got to, the one game that those teams played against each other at full strength, they had to put Gobert on Patrick Beverley, banged a couple of threes on him down the stretch.
Yep.
Well, Kevin Durant, is a fascinating one. Like, we could very easily be anointing Kevin Durant the best player in basketball again after these playoffs. Or we could say, he's still a great scorer, but he's just not quite the same force, and he can't quite get to the rim the same way, and he wasn't able to carry the Nets in the end, and that he has fallen off a little with the Achilles.
I mean, is it going to be Durant's team or Harden's team in the playoffs?
I
think the ball's going to be in Harden's hands.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't mean that Kevin Durant can't still score at an incredibly high rate. But yeah, I mean, they should put the ball in Harden's hands because they need a little bit more ball movement and passing. I think that was sort of clear from these last two games against the Bucks. And then also, just is he going to be able to be enough of a physical force defensively? Because that's probably where they need him even more than on offense with the way their team is built.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing you wanted to see them do, I watched Sunday's game, I didn't watch the game last night. See them try, they didn't put Durant on Giannis at all.
Well, and they shouldn't, because he's going to get trucked. Even going back to his Golden State days, like, Giannis would go right through KD. He's just nowhere near strong enough to deal with Giannis, I would say. I mean, Jeff Green, DeAndre Jordan, I mean, Blake Griffin, I think, would do a better job on Giannis than KD. Because KD has actually lost some weight as well, which is good for him overall, but not good for defending Giannis.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid, obviously, he's got to be another one. I mean, he's kind of, whether he as the center can be the driver of efficient offense in the playoffs, and then some of the same defensive questions as with Gobert, although he's got more talent around him than Gobert. That's one where, I mean, he's probably, you might even argue that as good as Jokic has been, that Embiid on a per play basis has been the best player in the NBA this year. And so does that continue in the playoffs? That's a fascinating one.
Yeah, it's harder to play through him him than it is to play through Jokic, just because Embiid's going to be so much more on the block and he's not really, you know, he's not dishing and dribbling the ball up and doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he's doing more of that this year, and they've gotten him the ball a lot in the clutch this year, and he's been pretty good, but we'll see if teams lock in a little bit more, whether that could change. And then obviously Giannis, I don't think we need to talk about him too much. I think his playoff issues have been well documented, and the issues with the jumper and stuff, and so he's I think whether he can really be a force defensively in the playoffs as much as he was last year in the regular season is a question too. But would you consider this the most wide open playoffs in recent memory?
Yes. If Jamal Murray were 100%, I would say there were 8 teams with a legitimate chance of winning the title.
Yeah, the three in the East.
Yeah.
And then the 2 LA teams, Utah and Phoenix.
Yes.
You give Phoenix a legitimate chance of winning the title, huh?
I think especially if they're in the home court position for the entire playoffs, I think you have to at least respect that. That they could, yeah. I'd probably give them the lowest odds of the 8, but you know, are they over the 5% hurdle where you're saying there's a chance, as the saying goes? Yeah, I would say so.
Well, particularly if the seeding works out as it appears it might, where you would have Utah and both LA teams in the opposite bracket for them.
That would be that would be unbelievable for Phoenix, right? You play a 1-8, and then you play the winner of like Denver, Portland, or Denver, Dallas, and then you have home court for a conference finals. Yeah, that would be the ideal scenario.
Yeah, against a team that's just gone through a ridiculous slog.
Yeah.
Before that, because whoever comes out of that will have had to beat the other two teams most. Well, I guess Utah wouldn't have had to, but that'll be fascinating. And Philly, I would rank them third among the teams in the East, but they're kind of in the similar situation. They look like they're cruising for the one seed now. They only are going to have to beat one of Milwaukee and Brooklyn. And yeah, you get into that conference finals, even if you're not a favorite, you got home court, and maybe there's an injury or something like that. Or
exactly.
You get hot from three, or maybe you're a little bit better than we thought, and then you're in the finals and anything. I mean, you could have a PH2 finals with Phoenix. It's real, a real basic finals, if you would.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. Well, is that time to change topics here, John?
Because I think it's.
We have spent far too much time talking about the playoffs and not nearly enough time talking about the teams that will not be in the playoffs. So you and I have ruled 7 teams out of the playoffs. But as with last year, I fear our sphincters may be tightening, because the last team that we both ruled out of the playoffs on April 7th, less than 1 month ago, was the Washington Wizards.
Oh, my goodness. They've been like legitimately good and fun and are playing really well. And I think they may end up finishing ahead of Indy even here, and in the 9 spot. I don't know if they can get to 8, but
yeah, they're 2 games behind the Hornets right now.
I mean, one game between them and the Hornets, like, Washington's got to feel pretty good about that. With no Gordon
Hayward?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Hayward's going to be ready. Like, he just got out of the walking boot.
Yeah.
At least it was reported that he was out of the walking boot last week. So that seems pretty unlikely to me that he's going to be back at anywhere approaching full strength or at all for a play-in. And, you know, the Heat or the Celtics or the Knicks or the Hawks are going to be the 7th seed, but they don't have to beat that team. All they got to do, I mean, I might, like, the Pacers are really, I think Miles Turner, it seems like the way they're talking there, he's done for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, you would have to say that the Wizards would be favored in any individual game over the Pacers or Hornets at this point.
Yeah, yeah. They'll probably have to win 2 in a row on the road, or at least 1 on the road, which is more challenging. But yeah, we might take the L on that one.
I mean, what they've done is absolutely incredible. I mean, it was like a no-brainer to rule them out of the playoffs at that point. But so we've each ruled 7 out of the playoffs, and hey, only we still have, that means we have to rule 7 more teams.
Okay.
Out of the playoffs. As of now, I mean, we don't have to do them all now, but we should probably do like four of them, don't you think? I mean, this, like, to actually make this even remotely difficult so we can do another three next week and like actually.
Well, we're on hiatus next week.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. I forgot about that. So, I mean, I guess maybe we just need to make our whole playoff predictions right now.
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, let's go.
At least go in order though, right?
Yeah. Obviously, process of elimination here.
Okay.
To be sure. Okay, so Minnesota, Orlando, Cleveland, OKC, Houston, who, as you noted, is 5-39 in their last 44 games, which is just batshit insane.
Yeah.
Detroit and Washington.
Okay.
All right, I will leave it up to you here. Who are you going to rule out next?
The next team I will rule out is the Chicago Bulls, who have been a crushing disappointment in the Vucevic era.
Yeah, who could have predicted that?
I mean, you could have seen that it wasn't necessarily going to move them forward as much as maybe they thought, but
yeah.
for them to be actively worse is a surprise.
Yeah, and I mean, I thought at least this was going to assure them a chance. I thought they were even going to make the playoffs or get at least into the top half of the play-in bracket. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, they're done. They're four games behind. I mean, LaVine and Vooch are going to come back for Thursday. They both practice today. I surely will get to Chicago as well, but I think the Sacramento Kings, with no De'Aaron Fox and no Tyrese Haliburton, despite the fact that they have somehow been frisky, and despite the fact that they still have two games remaining against
the Thunder. That's why I didn't pick them, because they have two games left against the Thunder.
Yeah, but I mean, the Pels are playing well too. They're still a game and a half behind the Pels, and that's even to get to 11th. And then you've got the Spurs and the Grizz and the Warriors ahead of them for the play-in. And then the Kings would also, don't forget, have to win two games in the play-in.
Yeah.
So I feel more comfortable ruling them out than the Bulls. I mean, the Bulls just have more talent available. They're going up against the East. You could see a team like I don't see any of these teams, other than maybe the Spurs, just like totally free-falling, and then the Pels would probably take their place. So
yeah,
I think Sacramento to me has a worse chance than the Bulls. I will go with them. But then in the snake draft, I will, let's see, who would be next for me? Yeah, I think I would then have to go to the Bulls after that. So that I will go with the next like actual unique choice here.
Okay.
Because I assume your next one would be Sacramento, correct?
Yeah.
So our choices here are the Raps, Spurs, Pels. Do I dare go for a team that might even make the play-in? I guess I'm going to go, I might like the Pels better than the Spurs at this point. Even if the Spurs might be a favorite to make it in, I just think the Pels would have a better chance of that. Oh, they've got myriad injury issues. Who knows how long Brandon Ingram is going to be out for them. And Steven Adams comes back for 20 minutes and then has to sit out again with this toe issue. So they're not in great shape either, but they do still have Zion. I guess I'm going to go... And I'm also worried that if the Raps get in, like you could see the Pacers or Hornets free falling, maybe the Raptors and the Wizards both get in which case I could see the Raptors maybe making some noise. I'm going to rule out the San Antonio Spurs next.
Wow. Okay.
No Derek White.
Yeah. I think that's a good pick. I think they're drawing dead in a play-in game without Derek White.
Yeah. I almost certainly going to be like, because they have no chance of getting up to the 7 or 8 given their schedule, I would say. I mean, maybe that changes a little bit, but I think it's going to be pretty difficult there. So is that your pick as well there, Spurs?
The next team I was going to pick was going to be Toronto, because I just think they're a little too injured to really make a run to 10th, I think is kind of uphill right now for them. So I would have gone Toronto, then Spurs.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go Spurs and then Toronto. Okay, so you've now ruled out Toronto and the Spurs as well. So it's back to me again. It would be perfect for me if I just like lost track of how many teams we had and like ruled too many teams out of the playoffs.
Right?
We're ruling
Dallas out of the playoffs, right?
We've got three more to go here. We have now both ruled 11 teams out of the playoffs. And for my next pick, I'm going to rule out the Minnesota Timberwolves. So my remaining realistic teams that I would pick from here, Hornets, Pacers, Wizards, Grizz, Pels. I think the Warriors are going to make it. Whoever the seven seed is between the Celtics and Heat, I think they're going to make it. The Wizards, the only thing that gives me pause about them, as I mentioned, like in my power rankings for who's better right now, I'd pick the Wiz above the Hornets or the Pacers. But I'm just worried that the Wiz won't catch up to those teams and have to win two games.
Yeah.
Okay, I think the Pels will probably got to be my next pick. If they make it, they're going to be 10th. And that's just for them to win two road games.
Yeah.
I think we kind of, just because we know they're going to be 10th and it's just going to be difficult, I think that would be, that's the
yeah. pick for me. I think there's still a fear factor there. There's a respect for the amount of talent on that team, but the whole year, they've never shown themselves to be the team we imagine they can become. And they're still dealing with injury issues too. So they're probably the safest call left on the board.
This occurred to me the other day, and I know you've been hitting this too, and we did not like the Adams trade, but if you just look at, like, this team is like butting up against the luxury tax, right? To where they brought over Didi so they could sign him a little bit earlier because he was a draft pick of theirs and he cost less against the tax. They've got Brandon Ingram, Lonzo, and Zion easily, like not even close, easily their three best players. Those guys make basically $45 million combined. Like, if you look at the salaries on the rest of this roster and just the pathetic amount of production that they're getting from these guys, like, your three best players make $45 million. You're up against the tax. Those guys have played most of the year.
And you're like, losing.
You're not even probably close to making the playoffs. Like this, to get that much production for $45 million and to get so little from the remaining, what is it, you know, 95 or 85 million dollars?
About $85 million on the rest of the roster. Yeah.
Can we just go through some of these salaries in case people have forgotten of, you know,
Steven Adams, 29 and a half.
James, 29 and a half.
29 and a half. James Johnson, 16. You got 16.9 for Eric Bledsoe, who's been a big disappointment.
Yeah. I mean, those are the three.
Those are the three big ones.
Everyone else is a rookie scale guy. Jackson Hayes starting to play better. That's nice, at least.
Yeah, $5 million for Jackson Hayes. The other ones are all small deals. Losing Josh Hart hurt them. $3.5 million. Yeah. I mean, he was actually legitimate value deal.
Okay, who's next here for you?
Next team, can we queue up Tom Petty for the free-falling Indiana Pacers?
Oh, man. So, yeah, the Pacers, huh?
I mean, to me, for that spot, I still like Charlotte better than Indy, especially if Charlotte's playing out of the eighth spot. Yeah. So it really comes down to Indy or Memphis probably at this point as the team you're knocking out. Because I do think Golden State should be favored in a playing game. I think in a playing environment, Memphis is in a tough spot because their depth advantage basically goes away. And they're relying on starters versus starters and playing more half court, which isn't really their thing. Especially if they're playing out of the... If they're playing out of the eighth spot, maybe that gives them a little more, you know, better situation. But I think
the Warriors are going to get there. It's going to be close. But the Warriors, I mean, they've got two games left against OKC still, which 538's got the Warriors finishing a game ahead of the Grizz right now. Yeah. But a lot of that could change. You know, the Warriors also play Phoenix and Utah. Also, they have their last six at home where they've been a lot better this year. But you could also run into these issues where some teams aren't trying down the end. I mean, that West of like teams trying to jockey into getting the most favorable matchup. I do have this feeling that like somehow it's all going to turn out Denver's way. Because it always seems to end that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the Pacers just are nowhere near as good as the Grizz. I mean, I think that's ultimately what it's got to come down to. So I would agree with you. And I mean, especially with no Turner, they just can't stop anybody. They always seem to have myriad injury issues and, you know, they seem to want the coach fired. So
yeah,
winning to make it into the playoffs. If they make the playoffs, the actual best of seven,
yeah,
seems like they probably won't fire him. But if they don't, then they probably will.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how it'll turn out.
There's a 1-2-3 Cancun vibe there for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So that now leaves us with...
I think that's everybody.
Is that it? Is that our field?
That's our field. I mean, we eliminated Washington, So we have Charlotte in the field, but we eliminated 14 teams.
I've only got us at 13 teams eliminated right now. I think we got to kill. Do we have to kill one more in the West? Yeah, we do. We got to kill one more in the West still. It has to be either Memphis or Golden State, because Portland is going to make it as the seven.
Oh, no, right? I'm sorry. Okay, so I was saying I was eliminating Indiana, and then Memphis was the one team left over. So if we eliminate Memphis, then we're there.
Yeah, unless you want to eliminate Golden State instead.
I would take Golden State over Memphis in a one-game play-in.
So our predicted playoff fields then are Charlotte getting the 8, either Miami or Boston the 7 in the East, and then we got Portland or LA or Dallas getting the 7 and Golden State getting the 8.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're hiring for your company, what you need is help making your short list of quality candidates. You don't need 500 candidates who just applied with no regard for what the actual qualifications are. You need Indeed instead. You can post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. You can also use skill tests to winnow down the field of applicants. And using Indeed overall will on average reduce the amount of time you spend on hiring by 27%. You only pay for the candidates that meet your must-have qualifications, and you can schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. They've got over 130 skills tests, or you can even add your own. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. So you're getting the high quality candidates, you're saving time, and ultimately getting the applicants that are right for you. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at indeed.com/locked, the name of this network. Get a $75 credit at indeed.com/locked. indeed.com/locked. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. If the last year has taught us anything, it's that we don't really need bricks and mortar stores anymore. Going to your local auto parts store really was not a good experience to begin with. In that front area, they never really had anything other than just totally generic stuff. And then you would go to that desk, you probably had to wait in line while the one person who was there at the counter tried to find the part that the person in front of you wanted. And then finally, when you got up there, you'd ask for your part and they'd say, oh yeah, we can order that. It'll be here in 2 weeks. Well, great. I could have just stayed at home and used rockauto.com, got my part faster, and saved a bunch of money. Chain stores at different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. So go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car and truck. You just put your make and model in there. Write "locked on" in their "how did you hear about us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
Okay, we are here. We are here, everyone. We apologize for having had to mute on the app here, but the desktop client was not working. So let us know. Hopefully the audio quality is decent. We're just going straight with we got 15 speaker requests in here. Wow. Okay. All right. I'm going to stop prevaricating. Let's get to work. Let's start with Gerard. Gerard, are you there?
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. My name is, it's actually Jared. Yeah, no problem. So my question is about Terry Stotts and the Blazers. I'm not necessarily advocating for the Blazers to keep Stotts necessarily, but just given the presupposition that Lillard and McCollum and probably Nurkic are going to be there, I'm just wondering, like, what potential is there that's left to be unlocked, and what coach could unlock that potential if it even exists in the first place?
Well, the biggest issue I see is just at the defensive end. Is there more that they can do defensively than they've been able to do under Stotts, where they played a lot of vanilla schemes and basically, aimed to max out at league average? So can another coach get more out of them at that end? Because offensively, they're great.
Yeah, and I was thinking, from the offensive end, even like, would a Mike D'Antoni be able to get something more specifically? Something that I was always wondering about them, if they could shift away from the spread pick and roll scheme to a more pass and cut motion scheme that he ran with Nash or Steve Nash in Phoenix, if that could help unlock some potential on the offensive end, because I think the defense you know, granted, I'm not saying they can't get any better, but given their personnel, I'm wondering, you know, how much better could there be there?
I guess I sort of wonder the opposite, where they've been in top five in offense the last 2 years, but they're 29th defensively. Like I just don't think there's a lot of low hanging fruit left on the offensive end for them. That they've been really good at that end.
Interestingly, you know, you mentioned D'Antoni. I thought of him too, and obviously being in his early 70s now, maybe it's a little bit different for him. But this is for a coach who may have a couple more year window, and maybe a team that does. I can kind of see it from there. And the last job that Mike D'Antoni got was with the Rockets. I remember in 2016, we're like, hey, their offense is fine. They got Harden. They got to get better defensively. And instead, they brought him in, and they just got even better offensively. They brought in Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon. So I mean, there could be something to the idea that they can at least get better offensively in the playoffs. But the other guy I was thinking of that could be interesting was Steve Clifford, who you would imagine isn't going to want to hang out for that rebuild in Orlando, and definitely has shown some instant ability to floor raise for defensive teams. Okay, thanks for that one, Jared. And let's get to AG. AG, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. I just want to know your opinions on two factors, and I'm really curious about these two factors because they're not really measurable. It's in a playoff series, it's experience and the best player on the team, best player in the series. And I just want to know how much you guys value those, because I was thinking more of this in the context of the Phoenix Suns, but you guys can go outside of that. It's like, first thing, I think a lot of their players, major rotation players, don't have meaningful basketball experience. And secondly, I don't see Chris Paul or Devin Booker being the best player in the series in a majority of the series they would have to play to get out of the West. So I personally don't view them as a top tier contender. So I just want to know your opinion on those two factors.
You know, one piece of data I looked at showed that experience did matter, but actually the experience of the coach, when you factor that out, it mattered a lot more than the experience of the players, which I thought was interesting. Monty Williams obviously hasn't coached a lot of playoff series, so that could be a factor right off the bat there. And then I think your other point is exactly correct, though. What is the series where Paul or Booker is going to be the best player on the court? And that's a tough one in the West for Phoenix. And that's why I think, despite their record, a lot of people are a little more dismissive of their chances of coming out of the West.
And I'll add to that too on Phoenix. I'm not sure that their defense can hold up at the same elite level that it's been in the playoffs. And they've got some good perimeter defenders, and Bridges is really good, Crowder is really good, but they basically have Ayton and really no other viable bigs, and I'm not sure I believe in him yet in the playoffs. Can he play switching, more versatile defensive style and stay out of foul trouble? I got some questions there. They're also got their two main guys. This will be their first playoff appearance. So it could shape up that they get a really easy bracket, and that they can play, they avoid the two LA teams and they avoid Utah until the conference finals and make it to the conference finals. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to be a great playoff team. That could just be more luck of the draw than anything.
I had a similar thinking about it. When you look at I was thinking about a potential Mavericks Sun series. When you look at the statistical profiles, you shouldn't give the Mavericks a chance. But just because Luka's by far the best player in the series, I kind of have a hard time just picking Phoenix easily.
Yeah, I think. What do you think of the Mavs' playoff chances right now, John? Are they going to be an easy out, or do you see them as being pretty difficult?
I actually think they could be a tough out. I mean, I was really high on this team coming into the season. I feel like they've underachieved. I think there's maybe some weird stuff there behind the scenes. But at the end of the day, if Doncic and Porzingis are both healthy and playing, that's a tough out right there.
All right, thanks for that, AG. Let us move to Drew. How are you, Drew?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the question. So I want to bring up the Pels on a couple of notes. Number one, we know that B.I. and Zion are lacking quite a bit defensively. And for me, as a longtime fan, I basically, aside from all the assets Griff collects and all that, the only thing I'm looking at when I watch a game in terms of evaluating the potential for the future is how are B.I. and Zion developing on defense, because we know 5 years down the road, their offense should be, top three fairly consistently if they're together. So I'm curious for your thoughts on how they can develop there and what you think their likelihood of developing there is. And then I'm also curious, their offensive rankings over the last month or two have gone down. I'm curious for what you've seen there as to why their offense has tanked a little bit lately.
Well, I think with the offense tanking, it's no players. that's probably Lonzo missing a bunch of time, and you know, you're playing Najee Marshall and James Johnson a bunch. They have no shooting. Steven Adams even hasn't played some recently. I think teams also are starting to get at least a little bit more of an understanding of how to deal with Zion. And I'd also say that Zion seems to be slowing down very slightly. Like, he's held up amazingly well, but he plays a very physical game and very reliant on athleticism and just to attack the rim night after night after night after night. He looked like he was kind of out of gas at the end of last night's game, but Lonzo ended up saving him. So I think all of those are factors. John, you want to take the other part of his question?
Yeah, I Zion's definitely gotten better on defense, but he was just starting at a spot that was like 100 million miles behind everybody else. But they've been a disappointment on defense this year. I don't think there's any question about that. I think and I do think if they have more guys out there on the court with them at the offensive end who are viable, maybe that makes it a little easier for Ingram and Zion to lock in more defensively. But they have to get better at that end. I don't think there's any question about that for New Orleans to hit its potential. I think it's fair to characterize this season as a disappointment. And well, it's the defense that's been the main part of it.
Yeah, and if you had told me before the season that Zion was going to be this good, I think, yeah, you would have to characterize that as a disappointment. I mean, Adams, to me, has been a disappointment. So, like, they brought in all these guys who are supposedly going to improve the defense. I never was buying that with Adams, but that was certainly what David Griffin was thinking, and especially when he extended him for another 2 years as well. But, yeah, it hasn't – that has not worked out that well yet. Thanks for that, Drew. And next up will be Zach. Zach, what's up, man?
Hello, how's it going?
Quite well, thank you. What do you got for us?
Some Milwaukee Bucks questions, actually. First, I wanted to talk about what they could possibly do this offseason if they fail to reach expectations. I know Budenholzer could be on the hot seat, but like personnel decisions, is there any way they can move on from Middleton or anything reasonable they could get for Dante DiVincenzo, as I feel his value's dropped a lot this season so far?
I think DiVincenzo has trade value. I think he's a good player. I mean, I'd be wanting to keep him if I was Milwaukee, especially at his cost. I mean, it's sort of critical to have him on a decent money deal with the money they're paying everyone else. Chris Middleton's an interesting one. Now, the problem with trading him is that you need that perimeter threat around Giannis. So who are you getting for Middleton who's better than Middleton? I think if they go in a trade direction, it's probably more something like Brook Lopez and Pat Connaughton, you know, and then can they do something with those guys to get another player? And the problem is they're out on first round picks going out to 27. So what are the assets they can throw into a deal? They're in a tight spot as far as making trades to make this team better. I don't think there's any question about that. DiVincenzo might have to be included in some deal like that to get a major piece just because he's the only young asset they basically have.
Yeah, and then DiVincenzo, too, he's extension eligible this offseason. So if you extend him, then you're basically not going to be able to trade him next year unless you can get him for cheap enough that the base year compensation issues won't be a problem. Or if you don't extend him, then you trade him. You got to trade him to a team that realizes that he's not on that cheap rookie contract anymore. That's kind of the appeal for him. But yeah, he's kind of their only asset. So I'm not sure what you can do there. Middleton in particular, it's just those are the types of trades that just don't really happen. Of kind of good player for good player, you generally trade a guy for future assets. That's usually the type of trade that works. So I think trading Brook Lopez would be interesting. I think there would be a market for Lopez. And I mean, if they were to move Lopez, John, what do you think, like what type of player would they be wanting to get for him?
That's where I trip over myself. Like what are they even getting out of it? Would have to be a knockdown shooter, I would think. And somebody who can play switchable defense and probably has some size.
But then, so my
question, which is the same thing every other team in the league is looking for all the time and overpays for. So it's going to be tough.
Well, so here's my other question too: is like if you move Brook Lopez, who I think is still very good, who the hell? Like PJ Tucker is also a free agent. He's going to be 37 next year, so you can't rely on him for more than 20 minutes a game. Who the hell else is playing next to Giannis in the front court? Then
you're not even getting Bobby Portis back next year, most likely, because he has a player option. So yeah. Yeah, they're in a really tight spot as far as making moves with this roster.
Yeah, I mean, is there anyone, Zach, that you thought they should target with Middleton since you brought him up?
Something that intrigues me, I don't think it would ever get done, but a Tobias Harris idea, they make around the same money. And let's say Milwaukee and Philly both feel the need to switch things up. I feel like there could possibly get like a deal around those two. I don't know how it would all work out. But personally, from a Bucks fan, Harris is very intriguing as he's got size and does almost what Middleton does. I feel like they have very similar skill sets.
That's interesting. I would probably rather go ahead with Middleton if I were Milwaukee. The only way that makes sense to me is if you're saying Philadelphia is thrown in a draft pick and I can use that draft pick and Pat Connaughton and get another player too.
Yeah,
then I might think harder about it.
Oh, someone else that intrigued me a lot was Seth Curry in that sort of role, but I feel like his value's very high right now.
Yeah, especially on that team. If I'm Philadelphia, I'm probably not trading Seth Curry to the Bucks.
Yeah, well, it could be a real challenge trade if it were Bryn Forbes and Chris Middleton for Seth Curry and Tobias Harris. Let's just trade some sort of players. But I think Middleton has more defensive versatility on the perimeter and is maybe a little bit better of a spot-up shooter. So I like him better next to Giannis. All right, thanks for that one, Zach.
Yeah, and thank you.
Got time for, let's see here, a couple more. Let's bring in Vinay. How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for taking my question. I appreciate it. I'm a huge Warriors fan, but my question actually concerns the other team in Northern California, the Sacramento Kings. And I'm wondering, what the hell does this team do moving forward? Obviously, they missed a chance to sell high on Barnes and Holmes. They seem a little stuck, which is nothing new for this Wobegon franchise. So if you're Monty McNair, I'm just wondering what is your game plan of action this offseason? And related to that, what would a Buddy Hield trade potentially look like?
A Buddy Hield trade, it's tough because he hasn't played up to his contract. You're almost better off keeping him and hoping he plays better next year, to be honest. I mean, you're not winning the title next year anyway. Because you're probably going to have to incentivize somebody to take him at his number right now. But his dollars go down in the out years, so that may not necessarily be the case in, you know, 22-23. They made the trades for Wright and Terrence Davis. I presume they're going to re-sign Terrence Davis. I'm guessing they'll bring back Rashawn Holmes, too. I mean, they got a donut in the middle if they don't. And then they'll just, you know, have the draft pick, go forward another year. The biggest question is Bagley, and do you do an extension with Bagley, or do you, you know, ride out this last year at $11 million? What do you do there? Because he just, you know, even watching him last night against Oklahoma City, like, he was okay. But, like, he's just, there's just nothing special there, and you kind of have to almost move on from that at some point. Like, even I don't necessarily mean move on, get rid of him, but like abandon the idea that he's this central building block.
Yeah, for me, I would be looking to try again on maybe moving Barnes in the offseason, see what I could get there. And you know, if you can get the old Robert Covington type package for him, I think you would want to look at that seriously. Bagley, too, it seems like from all the reporting that there's an expectation there's going to be some kind of a divorce there. Re-signing Holmes, I think, yeah, they do have a big hole in the middle. I guess my question, John, is just like, you know, are they trying to just get into the 10th seed? Like, what is your overall goal for the next two or three seasons? I think, see, to me, that's what you need to determine first is, what is our goal for the next three to 5 years as a team? And then you try to figure out how to accomplish that goal, as opposed to just, okay, how can we make ourselves incrementally better next year that doesn't fit into a larger plan?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I feel like Holmes is young enough that, you know, if you're trying to be good 3 years from now, he still helps you. Could probably have trade value in the meantime if re-signed. And they don't really have meaningful cap room, so they're sort of in that bird rights trap where retaining Holmes then as a tradable asset becomes more valuable than letting him walk.
Yeah, a lot depends, too, on who they get in the draft. I think that's it. Obviously, if they can bump up into the top four, get some luck, then that changes a lot of things. Or, you know, if you can find another Halliburton in that, you know, late single digits range, that would change things a lot, too. But, yeah, the idea, I mean, building around Halliburton and Fox, that seems like a solid group of guys, you know, might form the nucleus of a lower end playoff team someday. But, you know, if those guys get to be Lillard and McCollum, you really feel lucky at some point if they're at that level. But even then, you're kind of, you've got to put a lot around those guys to really even get to being a consistent Western playoff team. Obviously, that's the, I understand where Binet is coming from here. They are one of the teams I think that has, if I were just put in charge with them, I'd be like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do with these guys, particularly with Vivek pushing to end the now 15-year playoff
drive. Yes, yes.
All right, let's finish out here with our old friend Sean out of Memphis. Sean, you are on.
Hey, guys, how are y'all? John, Nate, have y'all been doing all right?
Doing great.
Well, yeah, definitely. I would love to say that I was hoping that the Grizzlies would be doing great, but they're kind of struggled here, and I think fatigue has a lot to do with that.
Sean, I've got some bad news for you. On the part of the pod that you guys could not hear, we ruled the Grizzlies out of the playoffs.
Well,
but hey, if the Washington Wizards are any indication, that means that the Memphis Grizzlies are immediately going to win their next 13 games.
Let's hope. Well, so basically that was the thing that I was going to ask, was that when y'all looked at the Grizzlies this year with however much y'all have, how much do you believe in their defense? And I think that is something that has at least given me a bit of hope. John, you were talking about it with the Suns, with defense having to be elite in the playoffs. I don't think the Grizzlies are there yet, obviously, but with what value Taylor Jenkins can add with his coaching style and with the defensive depth that they have in some of their younger players, I do think that their defense, it was fueled by creating turnovers at the first of the year. It's now been fueled by better half court and 3-point defense. Do y'all feel it's just kind of, they've just basically played to the strength of the roster they have in place? Or do y'all feel that this defense, there's some young core pieces that can make defense a true identity of this team and make it stand out in the playoffs as they mature over the next?
Well, it would help if they actually played DeAnthony Melton a little.
Agreed.
But I can tell you, one of the reasons we did the offer sheet on Kyle Anderson was for his defense. Obviously Xavier Tillman drafted as a defensive player, Desmond Bain, pretty solid defensive player. So I think there's a lot there, especially with Jaren being back in the lineup now and what he potentially offers at that end.
Yeah, he's the key to me. But man, I guess you shouldn't expect this after all the time off, but he still just fouls and plays with his hands as much as ever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Figuring out what to do with his hands is an ongoing issue for him, definitely. But it's a tradition, and that, we had that with Jermichael Green too. So the other thing is, I think they got to get Ja better defensively, as good as he's been at the offensive end. Some of these guys too, like, they've been helping and contributing at the defensive end. But when you get down to brass tacks, you 2-3 years out, who are they going to be, like, the 5-6 core guys on this team? Are those guys really part of it or not? I think there are some tough choices coming up for this organization in terms of who are they going to pay and keep and who is not going to be part of this group going forward. You can't just go on re-signing all 14 of your rotation players.
Agreed. And now, end on that, actually, as a team, covering a team that is on the up and up, hopefully, as their core goes, I talked about them shooting and defending the three as being that next step that they've got to get good at to become a playoff contender. In general, what are some either underrated or less talked about aspects of teams that are so important in the playoffs? Like, is it defending the three? Is it half-court defense? When it comes to, obviously scoring and having superstars helps out in the playoffs, but just one or two team traits that y'all feel are so important that separates true contenders and non-contenders that are not talked about that much when it comes to playoffs on a consistent.
So what I would say, Sean, is this is an axiom that's kind of been crystallizing in my mind, and it's a bit facile, so don't take this to the bank, but I say the regular season is about strengths and the postseason is about weaknesses. So it's really the absence of major weaknesses from a scheme standpoint on either end. Like, you've got shooting at all of your positions. You don't have any guys that don't need to be guarded. And then on defense, you've got good defense at all the positions, or at least the ability to help for the one guy. You don't have multiple liabilities out there. You can play a lot of different schemes. And so they're just, when the opposing coach is game planning for you, there isn't that obvious thing where you're just like, oh yeah, this is what we can attack. That's that, I think, to me, is just not having weaknesses is one of the biggest things in the playoffs for me that stands out.
That's awesome. Always a pleasure talking with y'all. Thank y'all. Enjoy the stretch run in the playoffs, guys. Hope y'all have a great day.
Thanks, Sean, and always a pleasure talking with y'all on Locker Room. Hopefully we'll get things worked out for next week with the recording of the podcast as well. Actually, no, we won't get it worked out for next week. We'll get it worked out 2 weeks from now because John is going to be incommunicado next week. So we'll be back 2 weeks from today on Wednesday. That would be the 19th. So that'll be we'll be in the throes of playing Magic, which John wrote about for The Athletic this week. And we will talk to y'all then. Thanks again.